Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
The Bernstein and Holmes Show.
C.J. Stroud tonight taking on the number one overall pick in this year's draft. Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears.
Fairbairn, in ninth year out of UCLA. Houston's all-time leader in terms of made field goals. 56. First points of the night for the home team. And Santos, straight away, knocks it through. They just made it through, just with enough to get through, as it bounced on the crossbar of the camera that's on the opposite side of the crossbar.
That a camera doink?
Second and long. Stroud throws in the middle. It's Collins. Flag is down as Collins goes to the end zone for a touchdown. The three rookies in this draft class, about 5.5 games, and none of them have thrown a touchdown pass. It's a give to the end zone, Herbert. Touchdown, Chicago Bears. Loss of five. Bears have had long down and distance in this second half. And it's almost going to get longer. Williams got away from Hunter somehow. Fires downfield. It's intercepted by Lassiter. Needing 17 yards. Williams throws. Odunze doesn't come back. Incomplete. The Texans will get this one. Final score, Houston 19, Chicago 13.
Damn it!
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 a.m. till 2 on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. It is a Plumbers 911 Football Monday, presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and Busey Bank. I'm Dan Bernstein. That is Marshall Harris in on the Bernstein and Holmes Show. Marshall is playing through injury, so never let it be said this guy didn't have the kind of toughness that you ask for. This man just loves the game. You can tell this man loves radio.
I do love the game. I love radio. I've been told by several women I have a face for it. So I think I'm just trying to slide in. I'm trying to slide in, get in where I fit in.
Dude, no, come on.
What do you mean?
No, I'm just the camera loves you. Are you kidding?
Listen, when they told me this thing was on Twitch, I was like, wait, that means people can see us too?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's kind of scary, man. It's kind of scary.
And we're both pumping defunct sports teams today.
Very much defunct. The Homestead Grays have been defunct for a long time.
Sky Point to the great Rockford Lightning, man. So, yeah. So we're dealing with very, it's almost, you know what? Sometimes bad Bears football is like a warm cardigan sweater.
Because you know it's about to be cold outside?
No, it's comfortable. It's all.
Wait, yeah, you're used to it. That's what it is.
Yeah, sounds more like an old beat up hoodie, but you know.
Yeah, but
it's a trauma hoodie.
Hoodies are real.
I don't know that phrase.
It's one that I just coined this moment.
No, I'm with that though. And yet I completely understood what you were saying, Ray.
I like that.
Yeah, there you go. Trauma hoodie is.
Go to your trauma hoodie when you're not feeling great.
Trauma hoodie.
Yeah. We do it a lot on a Monday.
But Bears football. They said it wasn't going to look like Bears football anymore. This was the whole point of everything.
What do you mean? We have new personnel outside of the offensive line. What do you mean?
But they fired Luke Getsy because Luke Getsy made it look too much like Bears football because things didn't work. I remember, when did I first... I can't remember if it was John Shoup or... I know it was after Gary Croton. It might have been Aaron Cromer. One of these idiots. And I remember saying the offense is still uncoordinated. Like in the way that we use the term coordinator, what is your job? I coordinate. I put things where they're supposed to go. Things are, and this
That's
is my,
on me.
Yeah, but it's your job. Your job is to coordinate.
Yeah.
And if there's one thing the Bears offense isn't currently, It's coordinated.
I'm not supposed to open up the drawer looking for a fork and there's Tupperware in there. There's a reason that that specific drawer is shaped the way it is where those utensils exist. And if I open it up and all there is plastic Tupperware, I'm like, wait, what's going on here?
Right, your
it's
life
uncoordinated.
Is ruined. It's just something. It's not okay. It's not okay for it to still look like this.
I mean, it's okay because it's early. It's okay because it's not week 15 and you can give these players and these coaches the benefit of a doubt still going on the road to a tough venue in Houston, Texas with the roof open, which never happens. And yet they survived to the point where we are still in this game till the very end. And then you had a couple of rookies not on the same page and you're like, that's how we lost the game.
Yeah, and credit to Roma Dunze, by the way.
Tough man. That's why I'm in here with the crutches. I don't care.
Not just tough physically for him to be playing through a sprained MCL. But tough mentally to say after the game, I ran the wrong route.
Well, what else was he supposed to say?
You know how what guys say? We need to get on the same page. They diffuse responsibility.
Oh, okay.
We know we can clean that up.
We win together, we lose together. So if it's not my fault when we win, it's everybody's fault also when we lose.
He said, I ran the wrong route.
Yeah. Okay. Accountability is key.
I know it seems little.
Shouldn't that be the standard, though? Shouldn't accountability be the standard?
Of course it should.
I think these younger players, so Caleb and Roma Dunze, who's had more media training than an incoming rookie in the NFL in 2024? Who's had more media training? They've been dealing with media training probably since high school,
mm-hmm.
let alone college, where they have the professional consultants, which, you know, I might get into that kind of gig because, hey, I could teach these kids what to say, what not to say, how to give a little bit but not give too much.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole skill set. And I think we've got the most media trained generation of young athletes in the history of sports.
No doubt. No doubt. And that's great. I would also like for when the ball hits him in both hands, catch it. Because you're the number 9 overall pick.
That's what he was, some people's top receiver in the class.
And that
he had something in common with another top receiver in the class, a guy who was drafted ahead of him. I don't know if you saw that play.
Oh,
Malik Nabers. So like
I thought you were going to say Marvin Harrison Jr., who was running wild.
Well, now that they know that, now that Kyler Murray understands, it's been made clear to him, it's his job to get him the football. Yes, because in week one, you saw what Marvin Harrison Jr. did. And Malik Nabers had a whole bunch of catches this week, but when the game was on the line, he dropped a pass. So some of this is rookie growth, and that's not just the receivers we're talking about, but obviously starts under center Caleb Williams. What do you want from Caleb Williams when he has become a veritable pinata behind the line of scrimmage? And it's not just him. DeAndre Swift, also a veritable pinata behind the line of scrimmage. Do you see a theme there? If you're behind the line of scrimmage, you're getting hit. That's not good. Whether you are an offensive coordinator or an offensive uncoordinated, however you want to put it, that's not good.
How did they not fix center? How?
Is that where it starts for you?
I've been pretty clear on this.
Okay.
I have been fixated. I've been fixated when you on watching the center position. And it was Jason Kelsey, and it was Creed Humphrey, and it's Tyler Linderbaum, and it's some of these dudes, whoever the guy on Detroit, where you see Frank Ragnow, and you just see what it means to have somebody who isn't just replacement level, who isn't just Sam Mustipher level, but who's good, who's reliable and good, and on our airwaves. To have Olin Krutz, who was better than good. He was a great center. And, you know, like the Hall of the Very Good for a long time level player. And we're so lucky to have, and he has constantly said they need more resources at the position. They have to take it more seriously. And I don't know how they got to the point where it's still a massive, glaring hole. And I remember after last week, we said, that's a tough assignment for the interior of your line.
Right. Going out of the Titans.
Simmons and Sweat. And that's a lot. That's right. You know what? Maybe that they were just in tough.
But then?
Then here came the edge guys.
The outside.
And that is not an elite interior defensive line. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where the pressure starts. Sometimes up front, they look like they've never seen a basic twist before. And that's communication. That isn't just like I'm bigger and stronger than you.
What's funny about the Bears is when you watch them, and if you watch them over and over again, you'll start watching other football games differently because you'll be like, wait, is this a Bears problem or is this something that happens to everyone? And then you realize it happens sometimes to some teams, but it doesn't happen as often to anybody else as it seems to happen to the Bears, where defensively guys are just doing what they want at will. Like you said, basic stunts are just getting home way too often. And the numbers bore it out of any night. Not even the numbers bore it out. The look on Caleb Williams' face from time to time during the game, he looked like a beaten man.
The body language late in the game I thought was telling, and I'm not a big body language guy.
But he was tired and beat up.
Did you see the side-by-side, the juxtaposition? I think it was our guy Jack Silverstein who put this out on Twitter.
Is this the Justin Fields, Caleb Williams?
Both in the orange uniforms, both on the bench, both with...
Exasperated.
Both with the same skyward... look, and I wonder, we'll hear from Caleb, and like you say, that is a polished young man who understands that development is nonlinear, but you can't develop when there's a man jumping up and down on your neck.
I told you, the scariest play of the entire game for me was the Danielle Hunter sack, because of the angle that he came from where you're watching on a television set, he's going directly over him. And he looked like he just swallowed him whole. And I was like, I hope Caleb Williams gets up from that, because if he didn't, I would understand.
Yeah, there was one. Was it Hunter at the end, or was it Williams that looked like a great white shark?
No, I think that was the Hunter one. That's
Hunter.
Yeah.
Where it's like there's a seal somewhere or some poor
there was
man
a seal. There was a seal.
On a surfboard. And it just, you see that swoop and you go, oh my God. Yeah, and that's why Rod Marinelli used to show them videos of stuff like that, because that's how it's supposed to look. When they say, you know, we're going to hunt, they love using those words. That's what it looks like when you get them in 3rd and 8 and 3rd and 9 and 3rd and 10, because you can't run the football, because you don't have an offensive identity. And why am I hitting the table? Goodbye, Toledo.
For extra emphasis.
But why? I shouldn't be doing this in week 2.
The irony of the Hunter sack was he looked like a bear.
Goodbye, Toledo!
He looked like a bear, like, yeah, who just jumped on his prey and said, yeah, you know, happy eating.
It's
1.5 sacks. Do you think they're tired of Danielle Hunter? You think they're happy they don't see them but once a year now?
And he said something, too, after the game. He said something like, same tendencies?
Listen, Danielle Hunter was completely in his comfortability, if you will,
yeah,
of just like, hey, I know it's the Bears. I know I'm going to be good.
That hurt.
Brad Biggs had a great, as he does every week.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
With his 10 things.
Which is can't miss. But those kind of comments should sting a little bit. Those kind of comments, when someone says, oh, it's the same tendencies, it's the Bears, then... Why is there a new coordinator? Why were all of these changes made to the offensive coaches? And why did you bring in this level of competition?
I think he was more talking about like how to beat those offensive tackles. Like I don't think he was talking about the scheme so much as how to beat the linemen. Because I think that's what he was communicating to the Texans.
Yeah.
Well, the fact that it works is too bad, because you'd expect your own team to be perhaps a step ahead rather than behind. This segment has been brought to you by almostfreeteeth.com. Save on dental implants today. When we come back, I want to revisit something that Matt Eberflus told us when we had him on the air about how he, as head coach, bears his responsibility for more than just the one side of the ball. That, frankly, is better than competent. The Bears' defense is fine. You've got some really, really strong defenders. And when they made these moves, I mentioned how important Shane Waldron was. I said he was the most important coach on the Bears this year. But he's not the head coach. So let's talk a little bit about whose responsibility it is now to fix some of this when we come back. It's Bernstein and Holmes, Marshall Harris sitting next to me today on The Score.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? an easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Yeah, it looked too much like a Bears game. We're still watching Bears games. I don't like watching Bears games. I like watching football games. And why do Bears games still look like Bears games?
But see, you know what Bears games used to look like.
Yes.
So, like, just remember those Bears games and try to, we're just trying to get back to that.
We're never going to get, the league has changed so much, and it's just not the same sport really anymore.
You know, it's funny you say the league has changed so much, but last I checked, defenses have made a comeback.
Big time.
The Bears are big on defense. Big time. Well, that's been a constant.
It's true, and what they are doing is not, it's not uncommon around the league to have a strong defense and one of these sort of desultory offenses, but I don't want to do the dusty, it's not just us, man, it's everywhere.
No, but I think the reason I brought that up and the reason we've been talking about that is because if defense is like become a common thing that everybody plays better, then does the value of a Matt Eberflus and his defense go down because now the offense is what's the most important thing?
Now that is the right question.
It's the only question right now because I'm watching these offensive struggles.
That nails it.
We talked about the field goals. Like, hey, if all it takes is 7 field goals to win a game, and you can get 7 field goals.
Because every kicker is incredible.
So somebody was talking about bringing the goalposts in.
Sure.
You're on board with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why not?
Make it harder.
Well, the last time this happened, the last time we had sort of one of these punctuated equilibrium
moments,
evolutionary shifts, was when they did the K-balls. That it used to be that in the late 90s, and all of the kickers were doctoring the footballs.
Oh, yeah.
They're putting them in the dryer. The Bears themselves had a contraption. It was like a Jaws of Life, and they would stick the footballs in them and squeeze them by the ends to make them round. So it was like kicking a
easier
soccer
to
ball.
Kick, yeah.
It was like a rugby ball or a soccer ball. So they did that. And the NFL's like, wait a second, we have to crack down on all these awesome kickers because it's making offense worse. And they said, all right, now we're going to do something called a K-ball, where it's going to be a ball right out of the box. And the kickers have completely obviated that effort because they're just better. And kids are going to kicking camps at 6.
That's what everybody's better at everything.
Yes, everyone's better at everything, but that's something that's affecting this game tremendously. So there's all kinds of things that are conspiring to make offense more difficult or to take away some of these passing touchdowns. And I think that you asked the right question. And that's why I said Shane Waldron mattered more than anybody else. Because you could have, and I said the Bears are going to be a top 5 defense this year. I predicted that. And I don't make predictions. But I felt strongly based on the second half of last year when, I don't know, maybe when Montez Sweat showed up and the fact that Jalen Johnson is fantastic. He takes away a side of the field.
Not a third, but a whole half?
You can't throw near him. His guy is covered. His guy is covered. I don't care where Jalen Johnson's guy is in your progression, whether you look at him first, second, or third. Covered, covered, covered. And that's why they pick on Tyreek Stevenson. And that's why offense matters. So they changed out, they swapped out all these offensive guys. Matt Eberflus is the head coach, and he sort of retreated to his comfort zone, to his happy place coaching defense last year. But he's still the head coach. And we watched these Hard Knocks episodes, right? I said it again. I'm talking about Eberflus, and I do the Eberflus. And we see him talking to talking to Caleb Williams and being involved in the film work and all that. But it's ultimately his responsibility to have gotten it all fixed. I want to listen back to what he said with us in August about how he is a head coach and what it means to have his own vision be something more than just on the defensive side of the ball.
It's about coaching the coaches, you know, so I'm not able to be everywhere at one time, but I am able to have coaches that are really good at what they do and understand standards and how we want to get things done at their position. So we set those standards. We understand how we want to look you know, in terms of the drills, in terms of the teamwork, in terms of the after action, in terms of how we evaluate those things, in terms of the fundamental skill that I was talking about in that article. And that's at every position. So that's how you do it as a head football coach.
Coaching the coaches and know the standards. Well, let's get on with it.
The standards very much not being met. I can't imagine anyone saying what we saw weeks one and week two are the standard for any football team offensively. So if he's coaching the coaches, and here's the thing, it's not like he has a first-time offensive coordinator. He has an experienced veteran coordinator in Shane Waldron, right? So my question then becomes, when you talk about coaching the coaches, is that just a basic check-in? How ingrained are you into what's going on in the offense? Because if you're calling plays defensively and you're responsible for the defense, that's a whole level of responsibility that maybe you wouldn't have if you were just the CEO, so to speak, of a football team. I don't know what the dynamic is. I hope we learn more about it. I also hope just in general that the offense improves, which I expect it to. Like, it can't get much worse. We can agree on that, right? So last week it was like, hey, at least Caleb Williams didn't turn the ball over. Well, I looked up this week. There he was, turning the ball over. And they still weren't running the football. And guys were not, the rushing game was not, it was not okay, first of all. Because I know that's what was used to describe it afterwards by Matt Eberflus. But also, they were getting pushed around up front. So every, like, even the drive where they scored, like, you need a 24-yard pass interference to get in position to score.
Which, and that's okay, because the reason they got the interference is because it was a great ball.
Yeah, it was a great ball that Caleb threw. Only one person had a chance to get the ball, so, you know, it was blatant pass interference inside, what, the 5-yard line?
He just tackled the guy.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm beat, I'm tackling him.
Yes. So that way, at least he's not scoring, and we can reset for it with our red zone defense.
A 773 texter says, it's almost like the guy who lost multiple games in historic fashion the previous season might not be good at any part of the head coaching job.
But
I'll even reel that back in a little bit.
I think a lot of that, and this is why I was so excited that with less than 2 minutes to play, the Bears had the ball with a chance to win the game, is because never did I feel like they're going to win the game when they had those chances the last 2 years. And I was like, maybe this is the turning of the corner on that. Clearly it was not. Until they turn the corner on being able to do something in late game situations, I can't buy it.
Caleb Williams had the chance to do something hilarious and awesome. He did. He had that chance. He had the chance to say, all right, this is different now. And I don't want to put anything on this retroactively that it doesn't deserve, but I'll say it ran through my head. And I tweeted something like, okay, kid, here's your chance behind this line. Godspeed. But that, if you wanted to be special, if you really wanted to announce your presence with authority and tell the world that I'm different, the Bears are different, it was right there. Your point is very well taken. If you'd signed up for that and said, hey, will you, against the Texans, down six, Caleb Williams with the ball, will you take it? I probably would have.
Yeah, because if anything else, it's a fact-finding mission. Let's find out where this kid is. Let's find out where this offense is. Let's find out what they're capable of in the clutch. Because most I check, NFL games, playoff games, seasons, how good you are historically, comes down to the clutch. Comes down to what do you do at the end of the game. Patrick Mahomes is a great example. Every year we talk about who's going to have the ball last, because that's who's going to win the game. Guess what? Go back to the Super Bowl. How'd the Super Bowl end? This is what the game comes down to.
And that's why we understand the decision was made to cut bait with Justin Fields, because of the passing numbers in the fourth quarter and the passing numbers on third downs. those were sort of not leaked, but you could tell by who was calling attention to some of that, where that was the standard. The standard wasn't being met for those things. So you recalibrate and you bring in new people. And remember, they kept the offensive line coach, Chris Morgan. They kept him.
What does that tell you?
They believe in him. He matters. His reputation around the league is terrific.
But then it comes down to the not the X's and the O's.
You never like to tell a man his unit sucks.
The Jimmies and the Joes.
But you never. It's not something you want to hear. Sir, your unit sucks.
These Joes are average, or at least they've played that way so far, if not worse.
Average Joes, winner! It's a couple of bad days for Chris Morgan's group. And you can't have many more if this is going to get better. I also want to take another talking point away. And this is one of the Collinsworth points last night while he wasn't gushing over the mundane. No one gushes over the mundane quite like Chris Collinsworth does. But he says, like, they really miss Keenan Allen. Come on, man. Come on. How do we know?
Well, I think historically he's just talking about Keenan Allen. What is the best thing that Keenan Allen does? On third down, you throw the ball and he catches the ball quickly.
Great. Well, last week he dropped a touchdown pass.
Yeah.
Last time we saw him, all I know is a bear. And again, you put on that helmet and it changes things.
Stop.
You put on that helmet.
Dan, don't put that on to Keenan Allen.
You put he's 32. And you sign a 32-year-old wideout who had injury problems last year. And I told you they were lying about the heel. I told you they were lying. It's a cleat issue. No, it's plantar fasciitis.
Well, it's a cleat issue in that the cleats that he's wearing are affecting the fact that his plantar fasciitis is flaring up more often than they thought it would.
Is he stretching his calves? Because tight calves can lead to plantar fasciitis.
Yes.
If this is
or
all
Achilles
about...
injuries was what I just found out.
Or that, yeah.
Or old age.
Or old.
Yes.
Old age. It's just so funny. It's a cleat issue. It's a cleat issue because he has plantar fasciitis. That's like somebody who's wearing a massive brace on their arm and the shirt doesn't fit because of the massive brace on the arm.
Oh, like I went through last year.
Yes. But we didn't say that was a shirt issue.
Right.
The problem wasn't your shirt.
It was the brace.
No. Well, you got to understand, it was the fact that he fell off a stage at a club and the fact that he went to a hospital that was
questionable.
Extremely. This is how bad it was.
He went to like an unaccredited back street.
Nah,
like
they wouldn't take me.
This
in
is where they take the gangsters
places.
After they get shot.
There was like a secret knock.
That's exactly.
It was basically. It was basically the storage thing in Reservoir Dogs where Tim Roth is bleeding out. That was the hospital where Ray was.
And this is how bad it was. I had to get said brace on my arm replaced like two. Rewrapped and replaced like two or three times because they kept messing it up.
What?
Yeah.
Were you fearful they were going to have to amputate at that point?
I was fearful.
They came into his room and said, "We're ready for your surgery."
They did.
And he's I don't need
excuse
surgery.
Me?
And they said, "Oh, wait, wrong two person."
They woke me up.
Happened in real life?
This happened in real life. They woke me up at 3 a.m. and they gave me a COVID test. And I said, "Oh, okay, this is interesting at 3 a.m. Well, why do I need this right now?" And they said, "Well, we're getting you prepped for surgery." I was like, "Whoa. I'm not here for surgery."
So if you hadn't like interjected at that point, they could have shot you up with anesthesia and you wake up. And did you find out what the surgery was for?
I didn't want to know.
Wow.
I just said, I'm not here for that.
I'm not making any of this up.
And then the lady,
this is all true.
I am beside myself.
Then the nurse left and came back and basically was like, "You're right. Bad nurse machine."
Sack machine.
Wow.
It's as Robert in Naperville said, it's like when an infantryman gets his head taken off and they say it's a combat helmet issue. Yeah. He's an old man with a bad foot. So
I love the 219. I'm 53 years old and I just got plantar fasciitis for the first time in my life, and I can't believe how painful it actually is. It's awful. No, it is awful. All these things are awful, especially if you're that old and getting it for the first time. Now, these athletes, they've been injured before, and, you know, like I said, once you have a dry socket, everything changes about what pain is.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a dry socket when I was 18 years old when I got my wisdom teeth pulled. And you just kind of understand that, like, pain is very much relative. And if you can deal with one type of pain, you could deal with the other. The Bears are frustrating right now. And they're frustrating because it is a work in progress, and this is a process, and we're in that painful process where growth is painful. Growth is always painful. And we all just need to suck it up a little bit and accept the fact that we're 2 weeks into a 17-game schedule.
All right, you're right.
The problem is, I don't know that this offensive line is going to get better. I can't guarantee that that happens because of the injuries and the combination of players who you're not sure if they should even be playing NFL snaps.
At least they got out with no more new injuries.
And of the nine,
right?
I was reading this morning,
of the
nine guys that are offensive linemen on the roster, three of them have never taken an NFL snap. That's not encouraging either.
Let's grab a couple calls when we come back here on the Bernstein and Holmes Show. That's Marshall Harris. You have the score.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
The basis behind that, and how did you see that kind of affect the game?
It starts up front with our defensive line, like Will, Daniil, Mario, all the guys, the way they were rushing, like together, and the way we were covering in the back end, that really set things apart for us. So, you know, credit to Sting and Kamari for the way they cover, allowing those guys to get the pressure. You don't get pressure unless the coverage is tight. So those guys covered well that allowed the rush to get there.
DeMeco Ryans, pretty good at what he does. The guy does not like to blitz.
Excellent at what he does.
No, he doesn't. I'm not kidding. Don't
I know. No, I know, but you know I know. I know.
Yeah, but he did blitz a lot.
He's like, oh, rookie quarterback back there? I haven't seen a semblance of a running game? Watch this.
We did the thing. We pushed the buttons. The lights are blinking, and here is Shad on the south side. Shad, what's up? You're on the score.
My man Dan, 100 grand. Also, my boy, Marshall. The only man in the city of Chicago with the optimism of Steve Rogers. Let me tell you something. Okay? I'm a little concerned. Dan, I just got some rehab done to the basement. When I heard you after draft night, one thing that stuck with me that you and Lawrence stood on, and I talked to Danny about this, the floor. What's the floor? We talked about the floor so much. We can't be concerned with ceiling 2 weeks in. It scares me that the floor is so low after 2 weeks, considering the entire offseason and what they had. They even gave the guy a playbook before the draft. Why is it so bad? Last year, no preseason, no snaps for the starters, and we said that they were ready to roll, and we're seeing the tendencies again. It's the head coach, man. We have to cut it off at the knees and establish it there, because without him setting the tone on what to expect on offense, Dan, tell me if I'm completely wrong, because the floor has not got as low as it could get.
Well, I hope it doesn't get lower, but that's why.
What is the floor?
The ceiling is the floor. The floor is the ceiling. No, what Shad's talking about, and he's right, was that's kind of a semantic difference to it's not supposed to look like Bears football.
Okay.
But that's why I played the Eberflus cut that I did, and it's why I asked him what I did. Like, what? Basically, it was a nice way of saying, what are you going to do to make this better?
Outside of being the defensive coordinator, the guy who calls the defense.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I got
it. And I guess the early answer is, we don't know.
And the question then becomes, is it too early to know? Are you going to give him some grace, a little grace period to adjust? New coaches on his staff, some injuries on the offensive line. How much grace does he get is the question.
NIU Dave is out today. He's on Sports Radio 670. Hello, Dave.
Hello, boys. Long time, Burnsy. How you been?
Good.
So there's one aspect of watching Chicago Bears football, and I love how you say it looks like Bears football still, and it gives me the pit in the bottom of my stomach when I think about that. But just like with Justin Fields and just like with Cam Newton, Caleb Williams is not getting any help from the refs. I could give you at least three examples where they could have called roughing the passer. One was so blatant, the defensive lineman took about a full step and then hit him right in the chest and no call. And if we're going to go down this path again, it's yet another thing that's going to really hurt his development. I want to know what you guys thought about that. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, it's happening again.
I mean, rookie lumps. This is not a football only issue, right? This is rookies aren't going to get respect until a certain point.
But
roughing the passer that's in my mind, that's a different type of thing we're talking about.
And we went through this with Justin Fields too on the slides and the, with some of the upright slides and the guys. And I will say this, the best thing I saw out of Tevin Jenkins all night last night was his desire to, after the fact, protect his quarterback. Do it beforehand. This motivation and this desire, you can't do that to our quarterback. We're going to come over and clobber you, and we're going to come over and mix it up with you on the sideline. All that determination, all that effort, all that intensity, pour that into your blocking.
And frustration. I think he was frustrated at that point, too, because the whole you can't do that, well, clearly he couldn't, he and his teammates couldn't block well enough to keep Caleb Williams' jersey near clean.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. It's just like it's like a hockey thing. It's like when your star gets beat up,
hockey
and then,
bravado,
and then it's like, well, you're beating up my star. I'm going to punch you. It's like, well, why didn't you just play better beforehand instead of stopping and punching people? Also,
I was about to give you an also. Like, why are we still punching people with helmets on?
Don't. It's
why? You have a fist. He has a helmet. You're going to break your hand if you punch him hard enough.
Well, and you notice when he turns to the left and he shoves Darnell Wright, and Darnell Wright doesn't move an inch.
Doesn't move.
I probably shouldn't have done that.
I'm going to shove you again and see if it works. Maybe if I shove you twice, it'll be an additive amount of force.
And good for Darnell Wright for not punching back and just being a brick wall. Get out of here, buddy. Yeah.
But that stuff's all silly. It doesn't mean anything. Here's Mike in Rockford. Mike, you are on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Good morning, guys. Listen, Dan, and I'm going to tell you guys something. Football's changed in 40 years, but it's still one in the trenches. And Ryan Poles, a couple years ago, drafted Brisker and Gordon. He should have addressed the line back then. You build first the line, then you get your franchise quarterback, because it makes your running game better. It's to make your pass blocking and your receivers get open. They just did this wrong, guys. That's the first point. I'll make it quick. Second point is, why is it that we're looking at this Sheldon? He looks like Getsy. It's terrible, guys. What is the deal?
What do you mean he looks like Getsy?
I don't know exactly what that means. It's like he's saying he looks like someone that Luke Getsy would be coaching on that offense.
I think that's a very kind interpretation, but I also, when it comes to the order in which you do it, I think, Mike, that's out of your control sometimes. That when the quarterback is there, you take the quarterback, regardless of what you got around him. Where I thought you were going was they haven't addressed the center position. I don't know if Coleman Shelton's an NFL player, and after two games, I have my doubts. And Texter says, yeah, Mike, it's changed in 40 years, except here.
Yeah. The building the defense the way they did through the draft, I don't really have a problem with it, because you can do two things at once. And back then, let's be honest, the passing numbers were looking better around the league than they are right this second. So that I think everyone has adjusted to saying the prime position that we need to address defensively is the secondary, because if you get beat, it's the game's over.
Yeah, the way the secondaries are being schemed now, it's everything's changed. It's so much too deep.
Well, and remember, their secondary was awful. They had no good players except for Jalen Johnson in that secondary. So,
Oh, you're not an Eddie Jackson guy then?
Oh, not that? End stage Eddie Jackson?
After payday Eddie Jackson is what we'll call him.
Yes, post-payday Eddie Jackson. Well, yeah, we know, in 2018, 19, and a little bit of 20, the secondary is pretty good. But then there was 2 years where it was terrible.
Yes.
And that was a long time ago. Yeah. We're talking about those years like they're recent. It's really not all that recent. Dan Weider is waiting in the wings, and he's going to join us next to give us his thoughts after his long night covering Bears and Texans. He's up on The Score.